So far, the Pentagon has spent or requested north of $700 billion for Iraq and Afghanistan, and few expect our engagement or spending to wrap up this fall. A recent study co-authored by Nobel-winning economist Joseph Stiglitz predicted that the war in Iraq alone will cost $1 trillion by the time all is said and done. So we thought we'd take a closer look at where exactly this money is going, where it's coming from, and what kind of deal the American taxpayers are getting. Caitlin Harrington is a staff reporter for Jane's Defense Weekly. Julianne Malveaux is an author, economist, and president CEO of Last Word Productions. Welcome to you both.
Good to be here.
We said in the introduction that one Nobel Prize-winning economist predicts this war will top $1 trillion. Do you agree with that, Julianne?
Absolutely. We're well on our way to it. This most recent vote of another $120 billion inches us even closer. Plus, we don't have an exit plan. We haven't budgeted any of that. So I think 2 years ago, we were talking about $1 trillion. I'd say we're talking $1 trillion, too.
Really? Caitlin, with the passage of the supplemental, what is our newest, most complete numbers for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I think we've spent, I think it's about $600 billion to date that we've spent on just the emergency funding for the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. But then, of course, it's always sort of a matter of how you interpret the numbers, because there's all kinds of money for personnel costs and all kinds of technology modernization programs that, if you include those, the number could be much bigger, although they're not directly costs that are not directly related to the war.
Speaking of costs,
you know, if you add to that,
go ahead.
If you just add to that, Tony, forgive me. Also, when you talk about Walter Reed, veterans benefits, also what we're doing with our veterans when they come back, that's a cost that doesn't show up in that emergency supplemental. And as we know, there are all kinds of challenges with the ways that people have been coming back, the kind of wounding that we've seen, which is much more costly in terms of rehabilitation than it might have been a generation ago.
Well, speaking of costs, which is where I was going to go with this, as a matter of fact, Caitlin, to you first, where does most of the war spending go?
Well, that's a good question. It's sort of actually a bit of a debate about where it should go versus where it does go. Certainly, a lot of it goes just for paying the personnel costs, for health care costs and things of that nature. But then there's also a substantial amount of short-term funding in these emergency. We've been passing these emergency bills since 2001 for war funding, and a lot of that money is going to just make sure these troops have the right body armor, to make sure they're getting the latest up armored vehicles. Right now, we're in the midst of a major push to invest $3.1 billion, or about $3 billion, in these new anti-mine vehicles that are equipped to protect troops from roadside bombs. And so a lot of it's just for short-term getting that, making sure the troops are protected, and then also just short-term technology upgrades, and then just replacing worn-out equipment. The National Guard in particular, they're about to get $1 billion in this latest supplemental just to replace all their worn-out equipment.
Well, before I turn to Julianne to talk more about some of the economics of the war, I have one more question for you, Caitlin, and it's this. Who profits most from the war, and in this war in particular? Because we hear the name of suppliers like Halliburton all of the time, of course, but who are some of the others?
Well, I guess it's sort of, if you mean just in terms of who's making a buck off the war, obviously,
yes,
the defense contractors. I mean, there's a lot of equipment out there. There's a lot of defense contractors who are providing services in the field. And in fact, that kind of raises a whole other topic, because we don't really have a good handle on how many different contracting companies are over in Iraq providing protection services and other maintenance services, other things of that nature. So that's obviously a major cost, as well as the cost of producing more equipment in the short term. Companies that make like body armor and armor to equip ground vehicles are also obviously very involved. But on the other hand, that's equipment that's absolutely essential, so it's a bit hard to argue against that.
Well, let me ask you, as an economist, Julianne, this has been described as a credit card war. What does that mean? And is this any way to finance a war?
What it means is that we're leaving the war debt to future generations. We're not paying as we go. When Lyndon Johnson further engaged us in Vietnam, he put a surtax on the income tax to make sure we paid for that war so that everybody was in pain because of the war in Vietnam. There are very few people who don't have family members in Iraq or Afghanistan who are in actual pain about this war. Well, people are outraged and they're organized and they don't like this war, but who bears the pain? It's the troops. We're none of us are paying for this, Tony. I think, as you say, it's a credit card where we're charging it. It's buy now, pay later, and later is going to crowd out important social spending, infrastructure investment, and other things because we're spending all the money. We're going to have to pay it back.
Let's talk about later, as a matter of fact. Let's go back first in order to talk about later. LBJ, his policies towards funding the war didn't really work out very well, and they led to an inflationary spiral that lasted a decade. My question, and that's something also that happened after the Korean War as well. My question for you, Julianne, is how big a concern, if at all, is inflation going to be following this war?
I'm less concerned about inflation this time around. I do think that the Fed has had a much more hands-on and careful policy about containing inflation. I'm more concerned about what happens in terms of spending in the longer run when we have to spend so much time paying back debt. I do think inflation will always be a concern, especially when money is being pumped in at a pace, but I think the Fed has that one under control. I'd look down a decade, Tony, to say, what is our economy going to look like once we're out of Iraq and we have this big debt to pay? Will we be able to invest in education? Will we be able to invest in infrastructure? Or will we simply be saddled with debt repayment at a time when we've also cut taxes for the wealthy, which means a bigger burden on the middle class and the poor? This war was spun as a national emergency. The words terror and terrorism have been used to intimidate the Congress into constantly funding war supplementals. The question has been raised even when the Republicans had the majority. I remember Senator Sue Collins of Maine raising the question, do we need to have this kind of budget? As soon as you raise that question, you're unpatriotic. So when you make a war an emergency, everyone ought to feel a sense of emergency. After September 11th, we did. But frankly, now we know that we went there under false pretenses, and no one feels a sense of emergency.
Caitlin, do you think that you can trace in any way the growth of the military-industrial complex to a tipping point in history when it actually played a crucial role in keeping the economy alive? I know that's a lot.
Well, I think there is a military-industrial complex, obviously, and it definitely plays a key role in the economy. But I think at the same time, there's also a feeling that you need to sort of look at your force planning and you need to make decisions based on real-life scenarios. What are the future threats we face? And make technology decisions based on that rather than just simply investing in the latest technology, which tends to just feed that industrial complex without really thinking about what our national security goals are.
Caitlin Harrington is a staff reporter for Jane's Defense Weekly. She joined us from our studios at NPR headquarters in Washington, D.C. And Julianne Malveaux is an author, economist, and president CEO of Last Word Productions. She joined us from WFDD studios in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Caitlin, Julianne, thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.